Just think of it. You're interested in ministry. And ministry has to do with people. Just think of it. You're working a job or having a business in order that you can minister bivocationally. Who are you ministering to but people? In this People Smart in Ministry class, we are looking at the various aspects of being stronger and stronger in your people skills in relating to God's crown of creation, man and woman. Today we're going to talk about the three skill clusters of listening. Robert Bolton wrote a book on being people smart 3 decades ago. And I've gone through this book and selected quotes for People Smart Insights for Ministry. So I'm just going to say, I'm going to quote him extensively in this presentation because I believe that Robert Bolton, though he wrote this years and years ago, has so much to say about listening. So this presentation is taken from Robert Bolton's book, People Skills. He talks about in his book, attending skills, where in listening there's a posture of involvement, appropriate body motion, eye contact, non-distracting environment. He talks about following skills, door openers, minimal encourages, infrequent questions, attentive silence. He talks about reflecting skills, paraphrasing, reflecting feelings, reflecting meaning. And in this book, he talks about the various pillars of listening. So we're going to go right into it, and this is a rather long presentation for this class, but I think I need to put it all in one presentation so we can just sort of take it all in. Now, I would suggest that you might look at this presentation one more time. Maybe in about 6 months, come back to this class, log in as a guest user, and look at this presentation again. Because in many ways, what Robert Bolton is talking about here are skills that we have to keep working on and be reminded of. So first of all, let's talk about attending skills. So you're talking to someone and you're a listener. And so much of communication is about listening. So let's first of all talk about the posture of involvement. Communication tends to be fostered when the listener demonstrates a relaxed alertness with the body language slightly forward, facing the other squarely, maintaining an open position and situating himself at an appropriate distance from the speaker. So if you think about listening, that first main category is attending skills, having a posture of involvement. I don't know if you see some of the bad habits that you see in communication today. You sort of have like this turn away and, you know, people are looking, or the sort of like looking down and communicating. The reality is if you want to listen, it's like you sit up, you put your shoulders square, and you welcome. You have an open position for somebody to communicate with you. This is the first very important attending skill. Part of that attending posture of involvement is body position. Facing the other squarely, your right shoulder to the other's left shoulder, helps communicate your involvement. The common phrase we hear, "he gave me the cold shoulder," suggests the indifference or rejection that can be communicated by not positioning yourself to face the other person. Because homes and offices are seldom arranged for good attending skills, you may want to even rearrange some furniture in your home to be able to position yourself more properly. A hospitable home, we're called in the Bible to show hospitality without grumbling. Part of that hospitality might be to arrange your furniture in an attending way. A posture of involvement is that open position, maintaining that open position with arms and legs uncrossed. That's a very important part of posture of involvement. Tightly crossed arms or legs often communicate closeness and defensiveness. I don't know how many times have you watched a baseball game In America, they call the national pastime is baseball. So what you'll often see is you'll see umpires. And when there's a bad call, you know, the coach will come out of the dugout and he'll come over to the umpire, and the umpire immediately does this. And he's saying to the coach, "I'm not open to talk about this call." And he sort of, his body language says the whole story. When we're communicating, we never want to be this like umpire. We want to have this open position. This is a bad habit that many people have. They just close their arms when someone is talking. And it pretty much says, "I'm not listening to you." In that appropriate body motion and attending skills, it's to be relaxed. One study of nonverbal listener behavior noted that the listeners who remain still is seen as controlled, cold, aloof, reserved. By contrast, the listener who is more active, but not in a fitful or nervous way, is experienced as warm, friendly, casual, and not as acting some role. Now, what am I talking about here? It's like this. Okay, so if you say, "I want to be a listener," it's just not like this cold, okay. But it's "Oh, really? Interesting." And move, if the person moves, move a little bit. But still not in this like forced way, but this relaxed, "I'm engaged in what you have to say." So my body also communicates that appropriate attending skill. In a lot of ways, motion related to the speaker. So that appropriate body motion is motion related to the speaker. So just keep this in mind. The avoidance of distracting motions and gestures is also essential for effective attending. The good listener moves his body in response to the speaker. Ineffective listeners move their body in response to stimuli that are unrelated to the speaker. Okay, so here's how that would work. Okay, so you're talking to someone, and essentially, you know, you're moving your body, but now all of a sudden, you move your body in ways that are not connected. You look at your watch, or all of a sudden, you're thinking about how, "Oh no, I've got to call so-and-so," and it's in your mind. And next thing you know, you do like a little, like something like this, and you are not fully engaged. And somehow or other, that motion not related to the speaker somehow comes into that conversation. That's how God made us, this intuitive, we know when somebody is paying attention and we know when somebody is not. Another very important attending skill is eye contact. Effective eye contact expresses interest, Robert Bolton says, and a desire to listen. It involves focusing one's eye softly on the speaker and occasionally shifting the gaze from his face to other parts of the body, to a gesturing hand, for example, then back to his face, then eye contact once again. Poor eye contact occurs when a listener repeatedly looks away from the speaker or stares at him constantly or blankly or looks away as soon as the speaker looks at the listener. There's a presentation in this class just on eye contact, and when you get that, you'll see some deeper skills in eye contact. Other attending skills are a non-distracting environment. And so many times that's what happens. You'll start talking to someone, the TV's loud, or you'll invite someone in. If you start talking to someone and there are distractions, fix the distractions. Remove the distractions if possible. Attending involves giving the other person one's undivided attention. This is virtually impossible in environments that have a high degree of distraction. I realize you're in a busy restaurant and it's loud. An undistracted environment, one without significant physical barriers between people, and one that is inviting rather than ugly, these conditions facilitate conversation. So, as a pastor, if emotional things or issues of ministry or hurt or grief or things like that, be conscious of your environment. You know, let's say somebody just lost a spouse or a loved one, and they want to meet you at a restaurant to talk. it is very important to find the non-distracted environment. You know, there's this favorite restaurant that we go to here in our hometown, here in Grand Haven, and I just love the food. But if you go there and you have a sensitive conversation that you think that's going to happen, it won't, because it's loud and there are a lot of people and there's a lot of noise and a lot of distractions. People smart in ministry is one where you're even looking at things like environment. The reality is attending must be real. Bolton says, however, if I try to fake attention when listening to another, I deceive myself. The listener who is truly present to another displays a vitality that registers on face and body his interest and concern for what the other is saying. So attending, it's just not attending skills that you have to go through like the law of attending. It's that real love in your heart that you'll give your full attention to listening to what is said. Students of communication are convinced that most communication is nonverbal. The most commonly quoted estimate based on research is that 85% of our communication is nonverbal. So if our attending is not real, it's only just you're sitting there, it will be seen by your body language. Another very important part of listening are what's called following skills. One of the primary tasks of a listener is to stay out of the other's way so the listener can discover how the speaker views his situation. So following skills is actually paying attention, taking that inside yourself that distracts you from what's being said, and put yourself in that present while you're listening. Researchers tell us that it's not at all uncommon for listeners to lead and direct conversations through frequent use of questions. It's also not common for the listener to talk so much that he monopolizes the conversation. Now, I'll tell you, that's a pitfall for pastors. A lot of times, pastors are so busy. We're so busy. So what happens is someone comes before us, and if you have experience, you sort of know many of the trails many people go down. So somebody says, Pastor, I have a problem, so you listen. And you know where this is going to go. So what you do is you try to get there faster, so you throw questions so you quickly can get there. And what's really happening is you take over the conversation. But as a pastor who is sensitive, it's somehow what you want to do is just hold back. And you might be surprised that it's not always what you think it's going to be. But one of the pitfalls of pastors is that we can often take over the conversation, even under the guise of listening. I know that I've done it. And I know that I have to always work on not doing that. But by letting the speaker direct the agenda if I'm listening to them. Following skills, let's talk about very specific following skills. One, they call it the door opener, and Robert Bolton talks about this quite extensively. A door opener is a non-cohesive invitation to talk. And there are three types of door openers. There are three times when door openers are not necessary. The speaker may plunge right into his theme. Sometimes, however, you will sense that there are other people who want to talk but need a little encouragement. Jerry did. At other times, the speaker will be in the midst of a conversation and will show signs that he is unsure about continuing. A door opener like this may help him proceed. Hey, I'm interested in hearing more about it. Now, what a door opener is all about is, okay, let's say Jerry is someone who says something sort of vague. It may be like, how you doing, Jerry? Oh, I'm good. Okay. Well, a door opener is, oh, you're good. Are you feeling good today or just so-so? Now, again, it's just a little door opener. So door openers are very, very powerful. People will often send door closers, roadblocks, when door openers are much more appropriate. When a child comes home from school with dragging steps and an unhappy expression on his face, parents often respond in ways that make the child withdraw into himself. Judgmental statements are apt to come forward. Like, I'll give you some examples. Okay, so the child comes home from school, and he basically says, "So, but that's a long face. You know what? You got to be more positive. Oh, what's happening at that school? Are you having a fight with a friend?" You see, those are all closed doors. Or they say to the student, you know, "I'm not interested." The same thing happens with pastors. You know, we're leaders, spiritual leaders. Somebody comes to us and they say, "Well, you know, I just feel so sad about, you know, some situation in my life," as they say that. And then what we do is say, "You know, we all have sad moments, Gladys. We all do. And I guess you just have to go to the Lord more." But those are door closers. They're not opening the door and getting someone to share. Some door opening ideas, let's talk about some. You know, here's some that Robert Bolton mentioned. "Looks like things didn't go well for you today. I've got some time if you want to talk." Or, "Something unpleasant happened to you. Want to talk about it?" Now, again, you put in the details as a pastor. You might say, "You know, what happened with your job and losing it is very difficult. I've got some time. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?" Or, "Having this financial difficulty is very unsettling. Let's talk about it." You know, these are door openers. Instead of going like, "You know, it's tough times financially out there for everybody, and I guess we all just have to kind of buck up and do our best." That is a door closer. And you'll find that in ministry, these door closers can happen, but we need to be about those door openers. Door openers typically have four elements, and I just want to go through them a minute. A description of the other person's body language. "Your face is beaming today." You look like you're not feeling up to par. That's just an opener. Two, an invitation to talk or continue talking. "Hey, care to talk about it? Hey, please go on. I'm interested in what you're saying." Number three is silence. Actually giving the other person time to decide whether to talk or what he or she wants to say. And four, attending. Eye contact, a posture of involvement that demonstrates your interest in and concern for the other person. So these door openers are vital in ministry. In employing these following skills, let's move on to something else. And that is minimal encourages. Now, what's that? The word minimal refers to the amount the listener says, which is very little, to the amount of the direction given to the conversation, which is also very little. The word encourages is used because these words and phrases aid the speaker to continue speaking. Just a few words can let the other know that you are listening without interrupting the flow of talk or breaking the mood. Minimal encourages will be sprinkled throughout a conversation. Minimal encourages are something that you as a listener can inject into every conversation, and maybe just words like, "Uh-huh, really, amazing, wow, did he really say that? Is that how you feel?" You see, they're just little things that just keep the conversation going. Because, you know, if someone's sharing and they get no minimal encourages, pretty soon they shut down. You know, they've done studies at colleges where they would bring in a guest professor and then they would have the students give minimal or non-minimal encourages. So for the first 15 minutes, there's no minimal encourages. The students are all sitting there, you know, looking down. And what happens is they film this. The visiting professor starts going monotone. Okay, so then they do this test. So the next 15 minutes, the students are going to be more excited and more engaged, and they're going to move around and smile, and then what they see this right on video. Then all of a sudden the professor lights up and he's more animated, he's going deeper in, and then what they do in the experiment is they then at this point then the students go back to no encouragement, dry, deadpan responses. And then it's fascinating that the professor will all of a sudden go monotone within like 5 minutes. So that's how it is when we're conversing with people. As we're with them, are we with them, or do we sort of just like go aloof and, you know, we're not following? That's the truth of the matter. When you employ following skills, you also employ infrequent questions. You don't bombard them with the machine gun questions. In addition to asking open rather than closed questions, now here's a closed question. Oh, I bet that really didn't sit well with you. That's closed. No, it didn't. Instead, it could be like, how'd you feel about that? See, that's an open question. So in addition to asking open rather than closed questions, it's important to ask only one question at a time. Not, boy, how'd you feel? Oh, I bet your mother really thought that was not good. You see, it starts, you know, bringing too many things, and it distracts the speaker. When two or more questions are asked in a quick succession, the latter questions are usually closed questions. The tendency to ask more than one question seems to relate to the questioner's inner uncertainty. It rarely facilitates the conversation. So when you're listening, you're not just bombarding questions. There may be a question here and there, but the questions are open-ended and they're allowing the speaker to talk. So let's talk about another following skill, and that's attentive silence. Fact is, most listeners talk too much. They may speak as much or sometimes even more than the person who's trying to talk. So listening and learning the art of silent responsiveness is essential to good listening. After all, another person cannot describe the problem if you are doing all the talking. Now, how that is, and this one is often uncomfortable, because if you're quiet and silent, there might be some quiet moments, some silences. Now, I am an extrovert, and if I would have a downfall, many times I talk too much. So in a conversation, you know, I will learn about these following skills of attentive silence. And part of me has a hard time because, like, it's all quiet now. But listeners who keep really studying listening know that the silence are okay and to be relaxed in them. It's interesting. Before the birth of Jesus, Robert Bolton says, the author of the book of Ecclesiastes says, there's a time to keep silent and a time to speak. The effective listener can do both. Some people sit quietly during the whole conversation, pushing the other into a monologue. Excessive silence can be as undesirable as no silence. To sit mute like a bump at a log does not constitute effective listening. So any one of these principles can be taken to too far the extreme. It is rarely possible to listen effectively for a long time without making some kind of verbal response. Soon the mind of such an unresponsive listener dulls. His eyes become glazed, and it becomes obvious that the listener is not with him. Silence, when overdone, is not golden. It is then merely a lack of response to the person with needs. So the point being is, don't hide behind silence either. Okay, another listening skill is reflective skill. And these reflective skills, I should say, are those things where you show the speaker that you are understanding what the speaker is saying. And the first of these reflecting skills is paraphrasing. A paraphrase, so you're talking along with someone and you will have this paraphrasing response. A paraphrase is a concise response to the speaker, which states that the essence of the other's content, of the speaker's content, in the listener's own words, are expressed. And in this way, make sure they're not too wordy. It's the essential message, emphasizing the facts of what are said. In paraphrasing, then in your own words, getting into the skin of the speaker. So, okay, so you're talking to someone and they're talking about how their child is not respecting them. And they're talking, and maybe they're speaking for 5 minutes about this. And to paraphrase would say, you know, Susan, it sounds to me like you're not feeling respected. And you feel like your son is not walking with the Lord. Okay, now this could be a 5 minutes this person could say this, and this is some of the things they're saying. And by saying it that way, you're telling the speaker that you are engaged in what is being said. Part of that reflecting skills are reflecting feeling, listening for the feeling words. If the goal is to reflect emotion, one obvious way to do this is to identify the verbally expressed feelings in a conversation. People occasionally put their feelings directly into words. So what you're looking for is you're looking for the verbs that are spoken. When someone says, I feel hurt, okay, hurt is a verb. So you're listening for those verbs. And then by reflecting that, you say, so you feel hurt. And you listen for that. Now, they may even say something like this. It can sort of put you down a different trail. Wow, we really had a great time over this weekend, and everybody came over, and it was just a lot of activity, and there was a couple down things that I felt I struggled about. But overall, it was a really good weekend. Okay, now there's what was said. Now, you could be listening for the, are there a couple things you felt down about? What happened there? See, you're listening for those feelings, because a lot of times people will say things, but what they're really hurting about is cloaked or it's made in a very little description somewhere. In reflecting those feeling skills, in those reflecting skills, reflecting feelings, also notice, too, that sometimes just listen to what's being said. Because a lot of people suppress feelings. Because of the suppression of feelings is so widespread in our culture and in most cultures, the speakers may not use feeling words. They may not give you any clues at all. However, the overall content of what she is saying may give you clues about what she is feeling. Okay, so how does that work itself out? Well, somebody may say, yeah, we had a nice time, and my father came home, and my mother, and we had all of the things that happened in a family, and then everybody left. Okay. Now, there's no real feeling word in there. It's just sort of telling that this all happened. But if somebody said to me something like that, I would say, hey, did you feel good about that? Did you feel good about your time? Was it a lot of fun? Now, in a sense, I asked a quick question there, but I'm opening the door to see, in a lot of ways, as in ministry training, sometimes you just put a little open door fishing in there and feelings. And sometimes what somebody will come back to is to say, you know, I haven't talked to my father in many years, and he came to the meeting, we didn't even talk with each other. Okay. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? See, you listen to the general content, and sometimes the general content tells you that there's a hurt there. And in ministry, we're looking for those ways to minister to people. Another thing is observe their body language. One of the most effective ways of understanding what another person is feeling is to observe her body language. Because the reflection of feeling is so important to effective listening, and because observation of facial expression, tone of voice, gesture, posture give such important clues to a person's feeling state. I mean, if you see somebody, you know, their shoulders are kind of hanging low and their voice sort of is not that enthusiastic for how you know them to be, what you can observe is you can see that there is feelings that are deep down. And you've done that before. If you really know someone, you can almost tell immediately how they are feeling. And, you know, in a really good way to sort of exercise the reflecting skills and reflecting feelings is to ask yourself always this question. If I were having that experience, what would I be feeling right now? The best we can do is to understand our own inner reactions and guess what the other's emotion. On the basis of this guesstimate, the listener reflects her understanding of the other's feelings. So a lot of times, just put yourself in their skin, put yourself in their situation, and how you feel is probably maybe how they feel, and you can reflect that, and they can even respond to how you reflected on that. So another reflecting skill besides the feeling interaction is reflecting the meaning, not just listening and telling what someone said. But if you're really listening, a lot of times as a pastor or a leader, you can sort of indicate to the person, you get what they're trying to say. So here's a formula that Bolton talks about. It's the formula of you feel because. This formula is not very intrusive in a conversation. It helps people remember to reflect both on feeling and the content. It is an aid in keeping the response brief. It is far different from the encumbering conversations with jargon phrases like, I think I hear you, what you're saying, or I think you're saying this. It's more like this. You feel hurt because your sister has not called you in 3 months. You feel hurt because you feel your sister has a bitterness with you right now. See, you can have a whole conversation, and that because could be the elephant in the room. And many times the Holy Spirit will give that insight to you. And if you say that you feel hurt because your sister has bitterness toward you, the speaker may say, no, it's not bitterness. It's hurt. Oh, why? See, notice you're engaging, and even if you don't guess right, your guesstimate is not totally right on the meaning. It's telling the speaker that you are involved. So, we've talked about these reflecting skills. Another reflecting skill is that summative reflections. A summative reflection is a brief statement of the main themes and feelings the speaker expressed over a long period of conversation that would be covered by any other reflective skills. In other words, you're pulling it all together. A summary that can help the speaker understand herself more clearly. The effectiveness of a summative reflection can be best judged by the other's reaction and use of it. Now, this is very important. As we're listening, in some ways, maybe as the conversation comes to an end, can you summarize in a sentence or a line what was said? Now, this does take work and effort. Not a long, long, long diatribe or a big, long paper or a speech or a sermon of what's being said, but sort of put it down to just a sentence. You feel that your husband has been neglecting you, and you're wondering what to do about it, and you've tried a few things, and none of them have worked. Okay, now I've just summarized maybe a long conversation. Now it's there that the speaker says can respond back, but you also bring in that you are listening to what is being said. You know, this listening activity and skill and training, and today's especially, really goes deep. And in ministry training, it's very important that we become very good listeners. A people smart in ministry skill is to learn how to be good listeners, to become students of being good listeners. So as you reflect upon your life, think about what are two or three areas that you need to work on? Talk to somebody, talk to your spouse, talk to your friend about your listening skills, your eye contact, your reflecting skills, your skills of following. How are they? Because in ministry, these are some of the most important skills. I wish you well as God leads you into more and more of these people smart in ministry skills.